sort of closing the circle today because my boss, my first boss at Goldman Sachs, is sitting right there, Lee Cooperman. So I'm sure he's going to ask me some tough questions just like he did 25 years ago. Well, it's a pleasure to be here today in Newark this morning to have the chance to speak to members of the New York Regional Business Partnership. In the aftermath of the financial crisis, as we wound down our emergency interventions, I asked my staff to develop an ambitious outreach program so I could visit the different parts of the Second Federal Reserve District. And over time, I plan to visit all parts of the region. You know, I think each trip is important because it allows me to deepen relations with the people I represent. As you know, New York Fed District consists of the 12 counties here in northern New Jersey, all of New York State, Fairfield County, Connecticut, and Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Haven't gotten to the U.S. Virgin Islands yet, but we're working on it. In June, I met with community leaders, businesses, and elected officials in Brooklyn. In May, I traveled to several cities in the Mid-Hudson Valley north of New York City to meet with the leadership of those communities. And today and tomorrow, I'm going to be meeting with a wide range of people and organizations here in northern New Jersey to talk about what we do and learn firsthand about the economic and financial issues and challenges facing us, all of us. These conversations will help me represent all of my constituencies in my work at the Fed as I consider how best to manage interest rates and make other monetary policy decisions. As Linda mentioned, northern New Jersey is important to me, not just because it's part of the New York Federal Reserve District, but it's also my home. My wife and I are in Cranford. That's her hometown. So we're back, so you can see who's the boss in our family. But we're there because she has her mom's there, 88 years old, living in her own home, and it really is helpful to be close to her so we can lend her a helping hand. And Cranford's actually a terrific New Jersey town. So while my colleagues and I are pleased to work with the business community in terms of these outreach efforts, I think it's also important to know that Jason Bram and Ray Rosen of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York have addressed this group in the past. We also have a number of initiatives specifically targeted to low and moderate income groups, particularly here in Newark. For the past 3 years, we provided the Newark Essex County Foreclosure Task Force with data and analysis on the latest mortgage conditions and trends in a variety of ways, including roundtables, presentations, and newsletters. This task force was formed in response to the rise in foreclosures in Newark's in surrounding towns that began in earnest in late 2007. The task force is comprised of representatives of over 40 community development corporations, nonprofit housing counselor and legal service providers, government and community development officials, and advocacy organizations, all working to address this serious issue. Over the past 2 years, we've partnered with Bank on Newark. Bank on Newark is a private-public partnership developed to bring unbanked populations into the financial mainstream by providing people with assistance in establishing banking accounts and receiving financial education. The New York Fed serves as an advisor and a data monitor for the Bank of New York and for its sister program, the Bank of Manhattan. This fall, we'll launch our financial awareness video competition in Newark and Essex County in partnership with the City of Newark. The goal of this video competition is to promote financial awareness in the greater Newark community. The video competition invites university and college-level students to produce original videos that encourage young adults to practice sound financial decision-making. We've launched similar video competitions in Puerto Rico and New York City, and they've been very successful. Last year's videos were judged by a panel of professional filmmakers and leading advertising agencies, and then the winning videos ran for a couple weeks as shorts in the major movie theaters in Manhattan and Queens, so they were actually featured. I want to thank the Newark Regional Business Partner, PNC Bank, and NJPAC for inviting me here to speak today. I'd also like to thank the SGA Group PC for sponsoring this breakfast. Over the next two days, I look forward to meeting with your elected officials in Newark, going over to see Cory Booker right after this meeting, visiting Newark Now, sitting down with the Episcopal Community Development Housing Counselors, as well as meeting with New Jersey community bankers, credit union officials, visiting the manufacturer Accurate Box, touring Jersey City and learning a bit more about the pharmaceutical industry. As you can see, my staff has booked a pretty packed schedule. So let me start by way of introduction, review briefly what the New York Fed does and what makes my job so interesting. As always, what I have to say, though, reflects my own views, and not necessarily those of the Federal Reserve System or the Federal Open Market Committee, also known as the FOMC. As Lyndon noted, I'm vice chair of the Federal Open Market Committee, and we meet 8 times a year in Washington to set interest rates and make other decisions about monetary policy to try to generate the best economy we can in terms of generating jobs and keeping prices stable. At every meeting of the FOMC, each committee member presents his own current outlook for the region and for the overall economy. And so part of that assessment comes from our research departments, but we really want to augment that with critical information about local economic conditions that are supplied by a whole variety of people, our board of directors, regional advisory councils, and conversations with local stakeholders. And that really includes the information I'm going to be getting today and tomorrow as I tour through northern New Jersey. At the regional level, we put a lot of energy into what's going on in our region. We continually track economic conditions in our district, and we've created a large number of tools for that purpose. For example, to fill a void in terms of timely measures of what's going on in terms of regional economic output, my staff produces monthly indices of economic activity for New Jersey, as well as New York State and New York City. These measures are similar in concept to, you know, what we do for measuring national output, such as gross domestic product. And we've also initiated a consumer credit panel, so we can actually monitor what's happening to local household credit conditions, including the amount of debt people are taking on, and what's happening to the credit quality of the debt that they're carrying. Furthermore, we have a new survey to track credit and financing issues for small businesses. Small businesses, as you know, are very, very important because they create a lot of new jobs. The poll takes a fresh look at borrower demand by asking firms not only about what's happening to their credit applications, but for those who aren't seeking credit, why aren't they seeking credit? In all, we've had 876 different small businesses respond from the tri-state area to our May 2011 survey, and a good proportion of those were from responses from New Jersey. To share the information that we gather and produce about the Second District, we've created a rich website which has localized current data and maps on conditions in this region. So I invite you to go to newyorkfed.org, to explore the information that we've collected on small businesses, credit, and housing conditions for our region. Finally, and crucially, in the aftermath of the financial crisis, it's important to also recognize it's not just about monetary policy, it's also about financial stability. And we're working to put the nation's financial system on a firmer footing. We've done quite a bit, but more remains to be done, and we're determined to keep at it. You know, I recognize fully that there can be no return to pre-crisis business as usual, whether on the part of the financial sector or on the part of regulators like ourselves. So all in all, even when things are normal, there's plenty to keep us busy, and I would say we're still not yet in normal times. Now, let me talk a little bit about the general economic outlook. The statement we issued from the Federal Open Market Committee meeting earlier this month provided, a pretty sober assessment about the state of the U.S. economy. Economic growth so far in 2011 has been a bit slower than we expected earlier in the year. While jobs growth picked up earlier in the year, in the last few months, conditions in the labor market have deteriorated again, and the unemployment rate has edged up. Household spending has flattened out, and the housing sector is depressed. Business investment in equipment and software is expanding, but investment in corporate offices and other commercial buildings is weak. Now, some of the weakness in economic activity in the first half of the year was due to temporary factors, such as the hit to household income caused by higher food and energy prices, and the supply chain disruptions following the tragic earthquake and tsunami in Japan. Some of these restraining forces have abated, and thus we do think that we'll see stronger growth in the second half of the year. But it's clear that not all the weakness that we saw in the first half was due to these one-time factors. And in light of this, I have revised down my expectations for the pace of recovery going forward. On the inflation front, the committee noted that inflation has moderated recently as energy and commodity prices have declined from their peaks after having picked up earlier in the year. Both due to the increase in commodity prices as well as from supply disruptions from Japan. Longer-term inflation expectations, though, remain stable, and the committee now expects inflation to settle over coming quarters at levels at or below those consistent with our mandate to promote full employment and price stability. So a little bit of a bubble on inflation, but we think it's going to come off in coming months. In light of the current outlook, the FOMC noted in its statement that we now anticipate that we are likely to keep short-term interest rates exceptionally low, at least through mid-2013. We also discussed a range of policy tools available to promote a stronger economic recovery in the context of price stability. Further details on the discussions that occurred at that meeting will be available when the minutes to the meeting are published later this month, and I'm not going to comment any further on monetary policy today. Now, following the release of the FOMC statement, market interest rates generally did move lower. That should help provide some additional support for economic activity and jobs. I would note, however, that conditions do remain unsettled, and the equity market in particular has been quite volatile recently. So now let me turn to what's going on in our region. How are we doing? Let me start by saying that New Jersey is well positioned for growth. The state has a population of 8.8 million people. It's the 11th largest state by population. And despite the fact that this is a fairly mature region, the state's population continues to expand. It rose by 4.5% over the past decade. More than 40% of the population of those 25 years and older in the state have a college degree. That's a full 5 percentage points higher than the national average, so it's a very well-educated state. Our population is also quite ethnically diverse. Roughly 20% of the state's residents were born abroad, and that share is even higher in Essex and Bergen counties. Significant numbers of foreign-born residents in the state come from countries like India, Mexico, the Philippines, the Dominican Republic, and Korea. The state's economy is also quite diverse, and its industry mix mirrors that of the national economy. We have a sizable number of jobs in the state are in healthcare, in professional and business services, wholesale and retail trade, and leisure and hospitality. When we look at the northern part of the state, we see somewhat greater concentration of jobs in finance, particularly in Hudson County, in goods distribution related to the ports, rail lines, and trucking, and warehousing activities that are prominent here, in pharmaceuticals manufacturing and research and development, and in the private education sector. The area, of course, has also very important links to New York City. For example, the data centers here in the state serve many of the city's big financial firms. In addition, a large number of residents, including myself, commute every day from New Jersey into New York City. And a smaller but still sizable number of New Yorkers do the reverse commute, living in New York City and commuting to New Jersey. So how did the state fare during the downturn, and how is the recovery proceeding? As I mentioned, the New York Fed produces indexes of economic activity to monitor the performance of the region. Based on our index, the downturn in activity in New Jersey began about the same time as the Great Recession was beginning nationally. That is around December of 2007. While activity in the state is no longer declining, and there has been a slight pickup this year in the level of activity, to date, unfortunately, there's no sign that a strong recovery has yet taken hold in New Jersey. Quite frankly, this modest recovery in New Jersey contrasts with a somewhat more sturdy recovery in activity in New York City over the past 18 months. Employment in our region also declined substantially during the Great Recession. Job losses in New Jersey totaled about 250,000 workers. That's roughly on par with the 6% decline in job losses that we saw nationally. The pattern of job losses here in northern New Jersey was very similar. In New York City, job losses were also large, but not quite as severe, with employment in the city down a little over 4%. Now, the jobs recovery in New Jersey to date has been sluggish. The private sector has seen modest gains, with growth in some of the key sectors I mentioned earlier, especially professional and business services, education and health, and leisure and hospitality. Businesses in these sectors, on balance, expanded jobs at a faster rate than for the country as a whole. But the state continues to shed jobs in manufacturing and residential construction. And notably, overall employment in the state has been weighed down by declines in public sector employment. Like many states, New Jersey faced large projected state budget deficits going into the downturn and during the downturn. And as in many states, the adjustment to those budget gaps included job cuts through a reduction in state government jobs and cuts at the local level as state funding to local governments was cut back. Because the job recovery has been weak, there has been little progress in reducing unemployment in the state. The unemployment rate among New Jersey residents currently stands at 9.5%. That's the same rate as a year ago, and that's slightly above the national average. Now, underneath this slow overall job growth, however, there is a considerable amount of activity in the labor market, a considerable amount of churning going on. If we take a closer look at the pattern of job gains and losses during the recession and recovery, they reveal some interesting facts about the labor market in New Jersey. Of particular interest is that job creation in the state and the nation since the recession ended has been closely balanced between hiring into industries that lost jobs during the recession and are now getting those same jobs back, and jobs in expanding industries. So what this means is that many unemployed workers may be returning to work without needing to retrain or look far afield. In other words, they're going to go back into jobs that they lost. But however, an equal number may need to search outside the industry that they know best, because they actually need, if they're going to be employed, to move into a new job. And that requires retraining in some cases. So I think it's really important to stress the need for job search assistance and training opportunities. That need is likely to be very high in New Jersey and the nation in the near term. So let's now look at the situation for New Jersey households, of which I count myself one. Here, there's also room for improvement. While median household income among New Jersey is quite good, it's the second highest in the nation at about $68,000 per household. Nevertheless, about 9% of the residents in the state are in families with incomes below the poverty line. That's a bit better than the national average of 13.6%, but as you know, it varies considerably across the state. And here in New Jersey, that share is very, very high at 24%. Reducing poverty is a really major challenge facing policymakers, and local organizations like Newark Now, I think, are working very hard to create greater economic independence for low and moderate income residents. More broadly, how are the state's families doing in terms of restoring their finances? During the recession, all across the nation, the number of debt delinquencies soared, and many families had to reduce their debts to more sustainable levels. The New York Fed keeps track of credit conditions in the region, including the average debt carried per person and whether they're current with their payments. We use using a special consumer credit panel that we developed. The report for the second quarter of the year was just released on Monday, so the information I'm going to give you is very, very current. The good news is families in New Jersey have been able to reduce their debt levels. As of the second quarter of this year, for those people that have a credit report, the average debt per person was $60,400, down from $63,000 3 years ago. But there's no question that the crisis has taken a considerable toll. Delinquency rates on the debt are high. 7.4% of the debt in the state is seriously delinquent. That's about the same rate as the nation as a whole. The comparable figure for the state just 3 years ago was 4.1%, so we've gone from 4.1% to 7.4%. So what this means, I think, is that for the country as a whole, households in this state still appear to have a considerable ways to go before they reach more comfortable debt levels. While there have been indications that home prices in the area have bottomed and are starting to tick up in recent months, the mortgage crisis continued to take a toll on New Jersey homeowners. As of March of this year, 10% of all the borrowers in the state were either 90 days plus delinquent on their mortgages or their homes were in foreclosure, and that's above the national average of 7.7%. In a couple areas, the foreclosure rate is really abysmal. Essex County, the rate reached 16%, and here in Newark, it's 30%, so a very, very challenging situation. In our recent small business survey, which we conducted in May, we asked firms to report on their first quarter sales and their future outlook. The results here were encouraging. Over two-thirds of the firms told us that they had stable or increased sales in the first quarter. That's up from 50% last year, so we're seeing some improvement. When we asked about their future outlook, well, the majority of business owners, 56%, were neutral. Of the remainder, many more were optimistic than pessimistic, 37% optimistic, 7% pessimistic. So in conclusion, let me sum up. These debt and delinquency figures, together with the weak jobs picture, suggest New Jersey still faces a number of challenges going forward. In the near term, the key issue will be to expand jobs and reduce unemployment. At this point, it's difficult to say when the pace of recovery will pick up, but several factors appear encouraging, and I think the small business results, I think, are one sign of that. A continued expansion of output employment nationally would also help expand activity and employment in a number of industries in the state, including professional and business services and the goods distribution industry. Also, I think it's important to note that the contraction in public sector jobs in the state, which has held the state back, has slowed from the sharp declines that we saw last year. And I think it's going to become less of a drag on job growth going forward. Further, continued job growth in New York City should create opportunities for New Jersey residents, particularly in this part of the state. Longer term, I think one of the key challenges will be for the state to build on and continue to expand the quality of the human capital in the state, so educations and skills of its workforce. At the end of the day, a region's human capital really determines a large part of its economic success. Even though it already has one of the most educated workforces in the country, New Jersey still needs to continue to attract and train workers who can do a wide range of tasks that an advanced economy demands, such as starting innovative firms, operating sophisticated capital equipment, having the ability to design websites, operate in a high technology environment. In addition, I think a broad expansion of education and skills goes a long way to broaden the ability of people of all residents in the state to participate in the economy. And that's something that we really have to work on and strive for in the coming weeks, months, years, and decades. Thank you all for your kind attention. I'd be very happy to take a few questions. Well, I think that the Fed's view on how to respond to during economic expansions has changed, and I think that what's changed is really sort of two things that are very, very important. One, I think that the financial stability has been elevated to be on par with monetary policy in importance, because as we saw in the crisis, you can't have an effective monetary policy if you don't have financial stability. Financial stability can really be when you don't have financial stability, that can be very destructive to job, credit creation, and very damaging to the nation's economy. So it's not sufficient to wait for financial asset bubbles to burst and clean up after the fact. You really have to be monitoring those in real time and responding in real time. And I think there's been a lot done on that. The Dodd-Frank Act established the Financial Stability Council that basically get all the regulators together to discuss what's going on in terms of markets, financial institutions, and business practices. And the challenge will be actually carrying this out in practice. But I think that the apparatus is now in place to do, I think, a much better job of coordinating and making sure we don't see the kind of business practices that lead to excess that make the economy vulnerable to financial shocks. So I think that this is something that's very, very important to us at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. We have put a lot of energy in terms of thinking about our financial stability mandate broadly. We don't just talk to firms, banks, or firms that are supposedly on the sell side that are selling products. We also talk to private equity firms, hedge funds, pension plans, endowments. We try to get a complete 180, 360 degree look at how the financial market is working, and really do ask ourselves every day, what are the assumptions that people are making in the markets, at financial institutions? Are those assumptions well-grounded? And if they're not well-grounded, we need to respond because we can't actually have a recurrence of what happened. I think that there's plenty of blame to go around. I think, the Federal Reserve could have done better things, I think, in terms of supervision, being more attentive to financial stability issues. Obviously the bankers, the rating agencies, there's plenty of blame to go around. I think, I don't think it really is that fruitful to try to, sort of focus on that. I think really the thing that we want to do is focus on going forward, how can we do better so that this never happens again? Because I think, I think there will be always financial ups and downs, but I think we can do much, much better so that the financial ups and downs are less volatile. And when that volatility occurs, there's much less damage to the financial system, because the damage of the financial system then causes severe damage on Main Street, which is really what we all care about.
Yes. know if I can remember five questions, Lee. Okay, first, you asked a question about recession. Look, economic growth in the first half of the year was anemic, you know, around 1% or so. And whenever the economy is growing very slowly, I think there's no question that the risk of recession rises as a consequence. So the risk of recession is somewhat higher than it was, you know, 6 months ago. That said, I think the risk of recessions are still quite low for a couple reasons. One, if you look at why the economy was weak in the first half of the year, there really were two important temporary factors that I think did really restrain the economy. The Japanese earthquake and tsunami very much disrupted automobile production, and we're actually seeing automobile production now come back quite strongly. And two, we saw a big spike in oil prices as the Libyan oil production was disrupted, and oil prices have come back down, so that should Number two, we've actually seen some economic data that suggests that the economy is very much still growing. Retail sales for the month of July, where I think we're generally a bit firmer than people expected for that month, and there were also upper revisions to prior months. And the industrial production data, if I remember right, for July showed an increase in industrial production of 0.9% for the month of July. That's not a kind of recessionary reading. So, you know, the risks have risen a little bit, but I think we very much still expect the economy to recover. We expect the second half of the growth to be significantly firmer than in the first half of the year. But obviously, there is some concern, and you saw that in terms of our statement, FOMC statement, where we downgraded our outlook, and I think we provided a pretty sober assessment of how the economy had done. And you also saw in our FOMC statement that we said that we now anticipate that we're going to keep short-term rates exceptionally low through mid-2013. Now, in terms of your question, you asked the question about the Wall Street Journal article on the European banks. We're always scrutinizing European banks, U.S. banks, foreign banks, U.S. banks in terms of, you know, how they're doing in terms of capital, liquidity, credit quality. So this is standard operating procedure. This is something that we do as a matter of course. That's our job. And, it's really important to stress, we're not focusing on foreign banks any more than we're focusing on U.S. banks. We treat foreign banks and U.S. banks exactly the same. What was your third one? Well, you know, the other thing, I'm not going to really answer that question because I think there's a whole bunch of things you have to look at. It'd be a seminar rather than answering your question. But I think there's a couple of things that, while people are pretty gloomy about the economic outlook right now, and part of it is also that you see all this volatility in financial markets, there are a couple of things that I think are really worth noting that argue very strongly against recession. The first thing that argues very strongly against recession is that even though financial conditions haven't returned to sort of normal, they're a lot better than they were a year ago, and a year ago was a lot better than they were 2-3 years ago. So if we do a survey of banks and we ask them about their credit standards and whether they're tightening or loosening their credit standards, and they've been on a loosening path now for quite a few months. So it looks to us like credit availability is improving. The second reason to argue, I think, very strongly against recession is that the sectors of the economy that typically drive you into recession are already very depressed. So housing activity is already very depressed. Auto sales are quite low relative to what they are, sort of historically. So, the cyclical sectors have already gone down. It's much harder for them to go down further. And so that also, I think, very much argues against a recession. Chairman Bernanke, talked about, all the tools that we have available in his Humphrey Hawkins testimony. As I noted in my speech, I wasn't going to talk about monetary policy today. I will say, though, that we have plenty of ammunition left. Thank you.
We've heard a lot about the effects, housing, joblessness, and we all know that there are a lot of driving forces behind that, mostly the way people think and act and institutions follow, whether it's the budget deficit, the new tighter credit standards. So there are all these driving forces out there. A, what do you consider the primary driving force behind this? And we basically know it's lack of confidence. How do you turn that confidence around? And so to restate it another word, if you had a magic wand and you could only fix one of these forces, what would it be?
I think it'd be confidence. I mean, we talk a lot of small.
Well, but that's you know, how do you fix?
You said I had a magic wand.
Not to answer the question, though. You know,
look, I think that the economy is complex, and so if you get spending, then you get hiring, and if you get hiring, you get spending, and everything is sort of interconnected, and that's really why the confidence piece is so very, 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 very important. We talk to a lot of businesses, and we sort of say, "How are you doing?" And they say, "Well, we're in pretty good shape. We're making money. Our business is okay." And then we ask them, "Well, are you hiring, or are you willing to invest?" And some are, and some are expanding, but there are some that are holding back. And I think that holding back, I think, is really an important factor in terms of why we're not getting more traction. The second thing I think, of course, is going on is this is something that Ken Rogoff and Carmen Reinhart have talked about in their book. This Time It's Different. When you have a financial crisis of the type that we had, it's just harder to recover. And when I was talking in my speech, I talked about the household debt levels of New Jersey households coming down. Well, it's that financial retrenchment that makes it harder for the economy to sort of pick up speed. Now, the good news is that we're well into that financial retrenchment. In other words, the debt levels have come down, household savings rates have risen, but it doesn't look like, if you look at delinquency rates and foreclosure rates, it doesn't look like we're yet at the end of that process. So that's still a headwind that the economy faces. So coming out of financial crisis, recoveries are more difficult, and we're certainly experiencing that this time.
I interpret that answer to mean that you would have companies take that cash that got on their balance sheet and bump it back.
Well, I think anything that would make businesses feel more confident would be very helpful, because when they spend, they create jobs. Those jobs create income. That income supports household confidence and spending, and then you get a virtuous circle. But you got to get that virtuous circle started. The economy is growing, but it's not growing at all as fast as we would like.
I just have one quick question. Interest rates are, historically low. Confidence, obviously, much of the small businesses are not getting they're not able to borrow because the lenders, banks are not lending as much. What can Fed do to improve this situation? It's good to be stringent on lending. I think if they go overboard, small businesses can grow and can borrow, basically.
No, so. I mean, I think it's very, very important that, our examiners, when they go to banks, don't have the needle swing too far from, liberal to conservative in terms of lending practices. We certainly don't, obviously banks have to make their business decisions on who to lend to. I mean, if it's not appropriate for the Federal Reserve to sort of think that we could sort of better micromanage that situation. But we do have a role in the sense that we have to make sure that our examiners don't overdo it. And we have been very clear to our examiners that we do not want you to, impede the ability of banks to make good loans, good solid loans to businesses and consumers.
A couple detailed questions. First, in looking at the foreign bank branches, can you give us a rough estimate of how much of their activities is in support of trade, export and import, versus domestic lending? Second question, unrelated. You've had a long exposure to a company called AIG. What surprised you over time in terms of the information that was available, and if you had, over time, more accurate information, would decisions have been different?
Okay, let's take the AIG question first. I think that, the Federal Reserve's involvement with AIG was really about preventing the financial crisis from getting significantly worse and really damaging the ability of the financial system to provide credit to households and businesses. It was not about saving AIG per se. It was about really preventing
the failure of a very large, complex company with operations around the world, that if it failed at the time that it was in danger of failing, would have, I think, probably led to a great depression rather than a great recession, and that's why we intervened. You know, I think, look, at with the benefit of hindsight, obviously AIG should not have been doing what they were doing in terms of leveraging their AAA rating to write large amounts of credit default swaps. we were not their regulator, so we did not have a particular insight into what AIG was doing. I think now, though, that the fact that we do have this Financial Stability Oversight Council, I think, and the fact that we are going to be designating certain firms to be non-bank financial firms to be systemically important. That's part of the Dodd-Frank legislation, the fact that we actually say these firms are so important that if they failed, it would be a great problem for the U.S. and the global financial system. So we're going to actually scrutinize these firms a lot more carefully. That ability to designate individual non-bank firms as SIFIs, systemically important financial institutions, I think is a very, very important arrow in our quiver that the regulators didn't have before. And your other question, Mike? I don't really know. I don't really know the answer to the division of the business. I mean, I think that the foreign banks that do operations in the U.S. are really supporting the U.S. economy. You know, they're not operating here to support economies abroad. Recognizing, of course, though, that the economies are interlinked, and you know, global trade is a very, very, very important part of what's going on in this region, and provides a lot of support. So I think this distinction between foreign banks and domestic banks operating here in the U.S. is really not a very helpful distinction, because they're both supporting economic activity here in the United States.
Not just because it's the last question, this may be the easiest question you get all morning. as a non-economist, how do you get your job? You're the president and CEO, but who do you report to? Who is your real boss?
Well,
and who are you speaking on behalf of?
You know, I think, first of all, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York basically is one of 12 Federal Reserve banks, but I think we're a little bit special in the sense that we're essentially the operational arm for the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System that are in Washington. So, you know, at the end of the day, we have a lot to say about what policy is. We have a lot of advice to give to the policymakers in Washington. But at the end of the day, you know, Ben Bernanke and the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System are essentially my boss, and the American people are my boss. You know, people ask me what I want to do at the New York Fed, and I basically tell people two things. To maximize the influence and impact of the New York Fed to ensure good public policy is carried out in the United States in terms of monetary policy, regulatory policy, financial stability, and two, leave the Federal Reserve Bank of New York in a better place than I found it, so it can continue to perform that mission in the future. Well, thank you very much.